Look, you gotta hear this guy, Johnny P. He does a great job with these interviews. You know, coming from someone like me, that goes a long way. Sure, I'd like more cowbell, but what are you gonna do? Welcome to the Johnny P. Show.
Hey, it's Johnny P. here, and I had the pleasure of speaking with Christopher Hall of Stabbing Westward fame and also now The Dreaming. If you haven't heard The Dreaming, by the way, definitely check them out. I don't know what I call them, rock, metal, emo, glam. Just they're a great band. Definitely check out The Dreaming. You could tell the Stabbing influence is on there big time. Christopher talks about his time in Stabbing Westward and the ups and downs of the record industry and kind of what happens on tour when you're cut off. Very interesting interview. This happened, I think, in 2009 outside of Chicago after a Dreaming show. It was a great concert. He always puts on a great performance, and I was so thrilled to have him on for this interview. Chris, if you were to describe how The Dreaming sounds in contrast to Stabbing Westward, what would you say?
Better.
Better?
No, it's totally different. It's a more organic rock metal thing, where Stabbing Westward is very much an electronic based kind of thing. So this is way more five guys playing instruments in a room together making metal.
I know that you're going into it with kind of without no record label and kind of just doing your own thing. How has that been, touring kind of on your own?
It's been the extreme opposite of Stabbing Westward. Stabbing Westward toured in buses. Each member had a crew guy to set up their gear, a tour manager to tell us where to be, a bus driver, our own hotel room, unlimited beer and food and stuff like that. And at the end of Stabbing Westward, we were in debt $1.2 million after selling 4 million records.
With How did that happen?
Because we spent more money than we made every single night. Every crew guy cost $2,500 a week. The bus was $2,200 a day, blah, blah, blah. And with The Dreaming, we travel in a van that our fans bought us on MySpace. We sleep on people's couches. We eat peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. And we actually borrow no money from any record label to tour. And we usually come home with enough money to, you know, have a little money to split and pay some rent.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I remember seeing you had a blog on your MySpace about people were complaining they weren't getting their CD or something, and you were saying that's me. You know, I mean, people didn't realize that you were doing it all.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people buy something off the website, T-shirts, CDs, whatever, and they assume it's coming from some company, some warehouse where they're like, it's just like the phone answering people are in India or something like that. But it's actually me and the bass player. He does all the ordering online, like as far as taking orders and filling envelopes, and I make all the T-shirts and make all the CDs by hand. Actually, we get the CDs made for us now. We have a distribution deal. But in the early days, we would assemble every CD by hand, make every T-shirt, put it in an envelope, mail it. And when we'd be on tour, we'd still be selling stuff online, and people would be like, "It's been 2 weeks and I haven't gotten my CD." I'm like, "Well, we're kind of in a van driving around the country, and it's a little hard to find a mailbox sometimes, or to find the time, because if you drive 8 hours a day, get to the gig, set up your stuff, wait around to play your show, sign autographs, it's 2 a.m. and it's like you just don't have that extra. You have to wait for a day off, and then a lot of times on your day off, it's only a day off because the next gig is 14 hours away. So you have to drive 14 hours and you still don't get a day off, you know. So we actually would pack envelopes of CDs in the van. We'd have a system where one guy would put the envelope, the CD in the envelope. The next guy would put the return address on. The next guy would put the mailing address on. Someone else would seal it. Yeah, it was an assembly line. And then we'd find a post office somewhere and get out with 10 boxes of CDs. You know, just huge boxes of envelopes. And it was pretty funny. But we don't sell them online anymore.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I bought mine through your MySpace. I think
right.
But now it's in Best Buy, right?
Yeah, it's in Best Buy, Hot Topic, and FYE, as well as on iTunes. So we don't have to deal with that too much anymore. Yeah, I mean, when we get off tour, we usually put the T-shirts back up, and we've got some. We just made a CD of our rarities and B-sides and covers, and it's 13 songs of unreleased material.
That's some acoustic stuff.
It's got some of the acoustic stuff on it, some covers that we did that we never released.
Send Me an Angel.
Let's Go to Bed by The Cure.
Oh, wow.
A couple songs that were never on any of the EPs. And it's basically something we sell on the road to fans who already have Etched in Blood. It's a way to get another $10 from them. And they've been howling because people don't like to download music. They like to actually have a physical CD of all of it.
I'd rather buy a CD and have the hard copy, the artwork. I love it all.
Yeah, I mean, one of the cool things about buying CDs is that the two Stabbing records, Wither and Darkest Days, didn't go platinum while they were popular. We only sold about 600,000 of each of them, but they've since gone platinum, partly because of new fans, but mostly because people lost or wore out their copy, and or like their girlfriend took it when they moved out or something, and or got pissed and threw it out the window or whatever, and so people have bought a second copy. So it's almost like, yeah, yeah, but it, you know what, it made it go platinum, so we're happy about that.
Yeah, I mean, Darkest Days, I mean, I think every song is great on there. The for you had an album before Wither, Blister. Yeah, I don't have that one. Is that more kind of like more of a raw sound or?
Ungod was an interesting record because we had absolutely no idea what we were doing. It was the first time we'd ever recorded an album, and the songwriting was really arty. The songs were all like 7 minutes long.
Less
radio friendly, less way more relationship-based. Ungod was actually the angriest record,
okay.
Very suicidal. It was by far the darkest record we made. It was 94.
Okay.
Yeah, and it was very dark. Yeah, it was evil. it was like on scale with like the Nine Inch Nails. It was much harder than. When the drummer from Ungod quit the band and Andy Kubiszewski joined the band as a drummer, he brought in the more pop side of Stabbing. With he had songs from the Exotic Birds, What Do I Have to Do, Sometimes It Hurts, and Haunting Me were three of his old songs from his old band.
Really?
Yeah, and he brought those in, and those became sort of the pop, softer sound. They were big hits, yeah, but before that, we were a much darker, heavier band. And I mean, even the stuff that wasn't the songs he wrote, they were pretty dark and heavy too, like The Thing I Hate and Drugstore and stuff like that. Not pop songs for the most part, you know.
I know on then you had the self-titled CD, you know, I guess So Far Away I think is one of your best songs, and I like it a lot. I don't like the whole CD as much as Darkest Days, but I mean that song is great. I mean, it's my wife's favorite song. I mean, it's a lot of people I know, they love that song.
I mean, it was our most mature record writing-wise. I'd sort of come into my own as a writer. I'd been, in the early Stabbing Westward days, I mostly focused on writing the vocals. And every record, there'd be a couple of songs that I wrote all the music to and stuff like that. But it wasn't until the self-titled that I picked up a guitar and really started writing songs. Part of that became a little juvenile because when you first start writing, you kind of gravitate to the easier chords and stuff. The demos to that album were much darker and much heavier. Yeah, a lot of the melodies were the same, but the music underneath it would be in a minor key instead of a major key. And then our manager took over the band and talked a couple of the guys in the band into like being, you know, more pop. You can make it the band more pop, more Goo Goo Dolls, and it'll sell more records. And there are guys in the band going, you know what, that's a terrible idea. We just sold 500,000 records, like, on the last album. Why would you want to ostracize an entire fan base of people? And her mentality was, oh, because if you reach 4 million, who cares about the 500,000? And I'm like, you lose your core fan base. The 4 million that may buy your record today because of a hit on the radio will not be there.
They're not gonna,
yeah, they'll move on to the next, you know, cheesy pop thing that pops up. And I was fighting against it. Walter was pretty against it.
Was he the guitarist?
He was the keyboard player that started the band with me. And then Mark, the guitar player, was like hell bent against it, and she fired him. And she like talked the guys into like,
the manager?
Yeah,
fired him.
Well,
so
through pulling strings within the band.
Okay.
And so then she hired a guitar player we'd never met before from a band that she had managed previously. I don't even remember. They were not well known. They were signed to Columbia for one record, which failed. But he was like a very Oasis kind of Britpop kind of guitar player. Yeah. And so he came in on songs that were...
Huh? I can tell the way.
Yeah, yeah. And then she brought in the producer who produced the album, the band Suede, from the UK, which was like a big UK Britpop band but was never popular in America. And it was like, you know, David Bowie, T-Rex, wannabe 70s glam rock kind of crap. And that's what she tried to turn us into. And it got so bad in the studio that I was literally locked out of the studio for 2 weeks. I was told just not to come in because I was throwing a shit fit and like screaming at people and giving
control.
The producer and the new guitar player pretty much shut the door. We tracked drums, bass, scratch guitar, the way that we had written the song, and vocals, and then and I sang using the guitar that we had originally played on the demos, but we played it terrible. I'm a terrible guitar player. And then this other guitar player came in, they muted my guitars, or whoever played the guitars, whether it was Andy or Walter, whoever, and this new guy came in and just made up new guitar parts, and he wrote everything in these major keys and made it sound like Oasis and Suede. And we came in and we're just like, this isn't Stabbing Westward. This is like dark lyrics, and you know, most of them, there's one, the only thing was a love song to the girl who is now my wife, which is like one of the most popular songs at weddings now. The Only Thing off of the self-titled. Like, yeah, it's I've had 100 people ask permission to play it at their wedding and stuff. It's very weird. Yeah, it's a very romantic song.
I don't get past track one a whole lot, and it's not, no offense, I just, it's a great song, although I got a double CD where it's got an acoustic version of it. And I actually like that a lot. I had an acoustic, or a radio show doing all acoustic, and that was like everyone loved So Far Away acoustic. So I know it's not, after what we just talked about.
I love So Far Away. I think it's a beautiful song. I think it's one of the best songs I've ever written. But the way that it turned, well, actually, that one didn't turn out too bad.
But it sounds different than the rest of the CD.
Yeah, but some of the other ones just, like I can't listen to that record. I was pretty embarrassed, and then she changed the way the band looked and dressed and stuff. Yeah, she really.
Did you tour on that record?
We did tour on that record.
How was that?
It was bizarre.
Really?
Yeah, because we would play our old stuff, and it would be like all dark and heavy, and then this new stuff would mix in, and it
were
was like.
Like not your typical fans at those shows, or.
No, I mean, that's the thing, is that the plan didn't work. It was the lowest selling record we had. It turned off all of our fans.
It was supposed to be like a breakthrough.
Yeah, no. Yeah, it was a death nail.
What did you guys do after that?
We broke up. No, well, I mean, we went to Australia a couple times after that, and the record was actually doing very well in Australia because they didn't know who we were prior to that. So it was like a fresh start. But then we tried to write a new record, and the direction was getting pulled even more apart because some of the guys thought, well, if we just went more pop. And then Walter and I were going, no, we have to go back to what we were. Yeah, we have to go back the other direction if it's not too late. And eventually the same manager, hired two of the guys in the band to play in another. She was managing a girl singer, and she was putting together a band, and she stole two of the guys in our band and broke up the band. And then that girl never got a record deal, so they quit. That was the other thing about Stabbing, is that when we were big, we were touring in buses, and we had like everything we needed every day, But when the last record was on an indie label, and it was on Koch, it wasn't on Columbia, so their tour support wasn't as much. But the band insisted upon traveling the same level of touring, and we were losing money like crazy. So once we hit the end tour budget, which wasn't very much, it was like 3 or 4 months worth of touring, we could have stretched that over 2 years and maybe won over our fans again. But instead they did it for 3 months. Record label said, you're out of money, go to a van and you can keep touring. The band's like, no, fuck you, we tour in a bus, don't you know who we are, we've sold millions of records.
Sure.
And they said, we don't have any more money, you're done. And when
Koch, though, and what were you on, what label were you on before?
Columbia. Yeah, it wasn't, I don't blame the record label, I blame us. If you're not selling, 5,000 tickets a night, you shouldn't be in a bus. You should be in a van.
It wasn't your sound. You guys kind of, it wasn't, not totally your fault.
No,
say.
But Koch wanted a heavy record. Koch signed a metal band
and got
a pop
pool,
band.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I love
They Koch was pissed that we wrote such a pop record. They wanted Darkest Days. They wanted a heavy, dark, because they were a metal label at the time. So they were pissed too. And so then when it came time, the band was unsigned, and it came time to fight, to really like remember where we came from and fight to get a new record label and write a fucking killer, dark, heavy record like where we came from. The guys just didn't have it in them. They were like too spoiled. And so, when Johnny and I, Johnny was a drummer from Stabbing for a while. He filled in for a year on the drums when our drummer broke his collarbone and couldn't play. And when we put this band together, the rule was back to the roots. No bullshit, no producers, no record labels, just let's focus on being a great band, playing local shows, touring from California up the coast out to Arizona, Vegas, and start small and build. Exactly, and that's what we did.
It's a rock CD.
It's a Motley Crue meets Billy Idol metal in-your-face pop rock CD,
That's great. I mean, there's one track,
what do you want from me? Yeah. It sounds very Motley Crue-ish, you know.
It's like, that one's very Motley Crue meets Def Leppard meets Bon Jovi. Awesome, I mean, though. there's a lot of 80s metal and oddly enough a lot of 80s new wave in the album as well. There's a lot of Missing Persons and Berlin and those kind of influences in a lot of the bass lines and the guitar parts.
Etched in Blood, straight through, everything's great. And I like that there's guitar solos in it. It's very, you know,
shredding.
Yeah,
solos, like seriously shredding. Yeah, our two guitar players, have you seen us play live yet? Oh, you're gonna shit. Our guitar players can shred, and they do like harmony guitar solos and stuff.
Is it Sticks and Stones has a really cool solo in it?
Yeah, Sticks and Stones has that, has a shredding solo, and then Beautiful has a harmony solo where they're doing like side to side harmony kind of stuff really fast.
You don't play guitar then?
You know, our bass player had to go home for a week in Florida, and I ended up playing bass and singing for that whole week in Florida on this tour, and that kind of sucked. I don't like doing that.
Yeah, sorry about the bad quality with that. I was using a kind of a crappy handheld recorder after a show, and of course, what else happens but the batteries run out, and I missed the last part of the interview. But basically, Chris was a pleasure to talk to, and I mean, obviously, Stabbing Westward's a great band, The Dreaming's a great band, and it's really interesting to hear the ups and downs and what happens when you're kind of top of the world, and then things come crashing down, even if it's beyond your control.
Ho! You can find more great podcasts at lifestylepodnetwork.com.au.